Okay, thank you very much, and welcome back. We're going to go to our staff reports, number 9.1. We have a lot we're going to hear from Recreation today, and we're looking forward to hearing the first one, 9.1.1, Recreate Parks by Maria and Marta. And just so the committee knows that we are going to wait until the end of this presentation to ask questions.
Thank you. All right. So because the agenda is so long this morning, we did cut our slide presentation. So what you receive in your package, we've reduced it down a little bit. So the slides are all the same. There's just not as many. So you can refer to that for more detailed information if you do have questions or want to look back on that. So first of all, good morning. Maria and I are here today to present our work on the strategic priority of the Recreate Parks. Shortly after the park standard document was approved, we created the Recreate Parks team, which included myself and Maria, with support from Alex, Trudy, and Stephen, who began working on implementing the goals and some of the strategies that were within that document, and how we were going to move forward, and what our priorities were, and to start thinking about how we can, implement the strategy of the Recreate Parks, or that priority. All right. Go for it. Sorry. To catch me.
All right. So some of the items we're going to touch on today during the presentation is we're going to start with a quick summary of the Parks and Open Space Standards and Guidelines that were approved by Council last year. Then we're going to move into the levels of service that have been developed over the course of the last year and now formulate the Parks and Open Space Maintenance Plan. And then we will touch on the engagement survey results for the parks. There was surveys performed in our parks and open spaces last season, so we have results to bring forward today, as well as discuss the accessibility audits that took place in 5 of our park locations, and then finish off briefly with some recommendations moving forward.
Okay. So first, a quick refresher on the park standards. That has been the guiding document for all the work that we're going to present today. Oops, wrong button. So about a year ago, Council adopted the Parks and Standards Guideline document, and this document was a classification system that classified all of the parks, the different categories, and the minimum amenities that could be found within each of those parks. So in your packages you received, it had a breakdown of what all those categories were, and also included a list of what amenities had been reached within each of those categories, so you can see where some of the gaps are and where the successes are, where the wins are, what gaps we've already been able to close. So within those, within the categories, we have the regional parks, the destination, the neighborhood parks, the parkette, the conservation land, and the sport parks. So the whole purpose of this park standards document was to bring consistency in our maintenance standards and our amenities across the district within our spaces. Also included in the park standards document was the next steps, which is on the screen here in front of you. So with the work that we've been doing over the past year, we've actually checked a lot of these boxes off, and which we'll be presenting to you today. We've created at the operational level, we've developed maintenance standards and levels of service that we've begun implementing, which checks off the top 3 priorities in the next steps. We completed our park engagement surveys, which we'll be presenting today. We're in the process of creating a sawpit wharf plan, which also aligns with the 4th bullet, and then we still have a few more there that we need to check off the last 2, but we've made great strides to checking all these boxes on the next steps. And I'll turn it back over to Maria to go over our maintenance standards.
Great. So as Marta just mentioned, following adoption of the Parks and Open Space Standards and Guidelines last year, the engineering and recreation staff began developing new maintenance standards and levels of service. So I'm just going to touch on that process and the different maintenance categories here this morning. To begin developing the levels of service and maintenance standards, we referred, of course, back to the guidelines developed by Recreation and approved by Council last year, as it was important to ensure we were aligning with Council's priorities with the Recreate Parks Initiative and the standards document. So the intent of the maintenance standards, it was really important to highlight what the intent of the standard is and what we're looking to achieve with it. So we want to ensure that we have safe, clean, and welcoming spaces that meet the needs of all of our parks and open space users. We want users to see consistency within all of our spaces and how they are maintained and be able to recognize those sites as MODL locations. So other considerations as we worked through the development process, we wanted to move to a more of a routine maintenance model to maximize our efficiency with what we're able to achieve regarding maintenance in our spaces. So just a quick note on what is routine maintenance. So that's maintenance that you perform on a regular set cycle. So it could be a daily requirement, weekly, seasonally. So we have many locations, as you well know, spread across MODL. So it's really important that we start building in efficiency to maximize our effectiveness of our staff in our spaces. So another important consideration for developing the standard was increasing our presence in the spaces to result in better issue management and quality control with our maintenance. So we do this by implementing a variety of inspection types and frequencies and involving staff at all levels in the process. So here is a summary of the different maintenance categories contained within the levels of service. So just really briefly, waste refers to garbage collection and litter collection within our spaces. Washrooms refers to the cleaning and sanitizing and restocking of washroom facilities that we have across our parks and open spaces. Open space care, generally think of that as green space care, so mowing, trimming, tree care within our open space locations. We have a trail maintenance category. So this is new. It includes keeping trail surfaces clear of debris, looking for hazard overhead items, developing corridors that are free of barriers, and also cleaning ditches and culverts so that we can protect our infrastructure when we have extreme weather events, which we've been seeing more and more of. We have a sport park maintenance category. Also important is making sure our accesses and parking lots are maintained. And a very important category touched on earlier is our inspections and our checks. There's a variety of types within this category, and also included is quality control, following up on tasks to make sure we're doing our due diligence and meeting our maintenance requirements. We do have some unique park spaces across MODL, so we do have unique site-specific requirements. An example of that would be a site like Church Lake, where we have floating docks that we put out and take in every season. So that's an example of a site-specific requirement. And, of course, our playground inspections category, we've included new this year as sign maintenance, making sure our signs are legible, straight, clean, and free of barriers and vegetation that can impede visibility. And we have a winter maintenance category as well. So within all these categories, again, we include the type of service provided, the standards to which each feature and amenity is maintained, and again, aligning with the park standard document. So as we get started working through rolling out the new maintenance levels of service as we move into this next full season, we do acknowledge that we have gaps that exist between our current state and our desired end state so that we can get to that routine maintenance level. So some upfront efforts, of course, are going to be needed to start closing those gaps. So this is just a brief example of some progress we made last season in doing some minor project upgrades within some of our park locations. Also wanted to highlight that the levels of service are a minimum standard, and they are going to be subject to change as patterns of use change within our spaces and as we add amenities and features to our locations as well. So it is a very living document that we'll have to be evaluating and adjusting as we work through seasons and from year to year. So as part of our process to ensure we were looking at all of our features within our spaces as we developed our maintenance plan, and doing our due diligence with regard to risk management and safety. We did have a review of a number of our locations with our insurer and identified some features that had reached end of life and needed to be removed or closed from certain locations. So we do have multiple locations where there was impact. Those are listed here. Some of the items that are larger in nature would be, for example, the mark at the ball fields. There was the playground that had been in place for many, many years and had reached end of life and unfortunately had to be removed. And a number of old park benches in multiple locations that had to be removed as well. So certainly we're working to and hope to see these features replaced as they are features that users have come to expect within those spaces. This is just a sample to show some of the photos there on the left-hand side. That's the Mark Playground. There was the structure had started to delaminate. It's harder to see in the smaller photos. And over time, the playground has heaved and raised up, creating unsafe conditions there. And we have a sample of an older bench that had reached end of life. And on the right-hand side at the top, as Indian Falls Stairs has reached end of life as well. And we have a play feature where we have bolts that have worn and no longer keeping it in place as it should. So I'll turn it back over to Marta.
So one of the items identified in the park standards was for public engagement or user engagement to find out, you know, how people are using our spaces, what our spaces could need for improvements. And so this past summer, we conducted surveys. We had a summer student visit the parks over the summer to engage users and gather feedback. This method allowed us to gain some very site-specific information on the individual spaces. So she was out in all of the spaces and conducted a number of interviews with people that were within the area or provided them with information on how to complete the survey online. We also released an online survey, and this provided us with a broader perspective on visitor experiences in our spaces. In total, we had 174 in-person surveys and 135 online responses for a grand total of 309, which we thought was we were pretty proud of that. Our original goal was 200 surveys, so when we hit 309, we thought that was really good. Gave us a really broad sample. What we really wanted to know is who's using our spaces, why are they going to these, and what could be done to improve the visitor experience. So some of these slides are broken up into in-person and online. It just kind of based how that data fell out. So where we could, I combined the information. Where at some places, you'll see that it's separate. So online, we asked participants where they're going. So here, it's listed in order from the most frequently visited sites on all the way down. And as you can see, Hurdles, Miller, and the Mark are listed as the top three. We then asked participants... We then asked participants to rank their favorite places. So this shifts a little bit. So you can see that Hurdle still remains the most favorite space within MODL. So of the 135 online responses, 41% selected Hurdles as our favorite space. 36 chose Miller Point Peace Park, and 23 selected River Ridge Common. And then again, we can break this down a little bit further, and we can show where they ranked, as in one, two, and three. So we still see Hurdles, Miller, and River Ridge in the top three. Mark is the fourth. And then in that fifth spot, it's all very close between Sand Dollar, Indian Path Common, Mushamush Beach Park, and Indian Falls. So we found out where they're going and what their favorite spaces are, and then we asked them why they're going. And so this is a combination of both online and in-person responses, and this just shows why people are going to spaces.
It's to clarify what I'm looking at.
Okay.
this screen here, is it the bigger... words are the more popular and the smaller words less answers.
Correct.
Thank you.
So there wasn't a lot of surprises in there. So people are going for recreational, for picnicking, walking. Some things that came out was photo sessions. That was a bit of a surprise that people are going. The birding was another one that came out. So there was a few things that kind of popped out that we weren't expecting to hear. But for the most part, people are going to recreate within the spaces. Oh, now I've done something and can't click. Okay. So what we heard with regards to wayfinding in signs. So through our in-person surveys, we learned that 80% of the people throughout the park thought that the park wayfinding and signs were well placed and easy to comprehend. And we also had some people acknowledge that our new signage or the improvements they had seen in the last year, which shows that our implementation of the wayfinding strategy is working or is effective. In online surveys, which is represented in this graph, that number drops a little bit to only 72% of people finding our park signs easy to very easy to find and understand. What we heard with regards to parking. So here we have both online and in-person. So 96% of the in-person survey people stated they were able to find parking in the designated spots. Only 6 people had not been able to find parking, and 5 of those participants had been surveyed at Sand Dollar Beach. Online, this number dropped slightly, with only 80% reporting that they usually to always find were able to find parking at their favorite spaces. And so with the online surveys, people are responding to their top 3 favorite spaces. So we can really reflect these responses back to those top 3, which were Hurdles, Miller, and River Ridge. What we heard with regards to bathrooms and waste bins and waste receptacles, and this was in person. So before asking their opinion, we asked those if they use these facilities, if they generally use the amenities, and 55% said yes. So of those 55% of the people that said yes, they use these amenities, 80% reported the bathrooms were clean, and 97% reported that the waste bins were well kept. Online, what we heard with regards to bathroom, we asked participants to rank both the location and the cleanliness of the bathrooms. So 43% indicated that the bathrooms were easy to very easy to find, and over 60% ranked them always to usually clean, with 26% selecting not applicable. And of those that responded impossible to find, 5 had listed Hurdles as their top location. So what we can kind of, when we pull through the weeds here, we kind of realized that at Hurdles, people are maybe not being able to find the bathrooms, but generally people are, when they are using them, they are clean, but we did get a lot of comments about that, the location, and when we looked into the comments about it was that we're not directing people to where the amenities are. So when you pull up to Hurdles, you look at the beach, you get out, you go to the beach, we have nothing that say there's bathrooms behind you or directing to people to where the bathrooms are. So both in-person and online participants were asked if there was anything that could be done to improve our spaces, to improve their visitor experience. And so when combining all 309 surveys, this is what we heard. 15% requested more or improved washrooms, with only 3% of these specifically mentioning flush toilets. 11% requested more seating, and what the comments kind of came out was that they would like it more dispersed throughout the spaces. We had requests for more picnic tables and shaded areas to sit. 10% would like improved wayfinding signs. Many of these comments were around internal wayfinding and mapping within our spaces. 9% mentioned parking, and the majority of these comments were in relation to Hurdles and Sand Dollar Beach. And we also had comments with regards to the layout of the parking and the surface conditions within our parking lots. And 9% would like more waste bins or more dog waste stations within our parks. So none of this information were we surprised to hear. We also asked participants to gain about if they've ever had been faced with accessibility challenges within our spaces, and a lot of those comments reflect back to this. So of the 309 participants, 13% reported they'd had accessibility challenges within MODL spaces, and many of those comments were concerns were around unsafe and uneven ground, seating and rest areas, and signage. So it all relates back into what we heard with regards to requests for improvement. And as you're aware, we also had accessibility audits completed on five of our spaces this year. We have just received our draft. We're still waiting for our final report to come back to council with these. But MODL staff with the consultants visited Hurdles Beach, Mush, Miller Point Peace Park, River Ridge Common, and Indian Falls. And the goal was this, was to complete Rick Hansen audits on these spaces and identify the physical barriers within each space and what could be done to help remove some of those barriers to improve accessibility. The draft report also will include Class D estimates, which will give rough estimates, so the plus 35% to minus 25% of how much those costs will be to remove a lot of those barriers. And once we receive that information, that will come back to council with recommendation of help inform capital budgeting process. Next, Maria is going to talk to you about Mush washrooms.
All right. So council had previously directed staff to prepare options and cost estimates for improving amenities at Mush, specifically the washrooms, and which are currently exist as vault toilets. Existing right now, there's two large holding tanks with a pit toilet on top with a small structure. So much like what you'd think of when you think of an outhouse, that would be how to describe a vault toilet. So we have received back cost estimates for two different options with regard to this amenity at Mush Beach Park. So the option one was to cost out for two flush toilets within a structure. So this it would include, of course, running water with the flush amenity, on-site sewage disposal system, including design services and also utilities would be a power requirement as well. So this first option came in with a cost estimate of $550,000 if such an amenity was going to be placed at Mush Beach Park. The second option would be to make improvements to the vault structure. So it's the same idea, except the structure that sits on top would be improved upon to make an accessible structure with different materials that would make it easier to sanitize and clean as well. So an option for two new vault privy toilets within an engineered structure with design services came in with a cost estimate of $190,000. So wanted to bring that information forward to council today as well.
You just need to speak up a little bit more.
Oh. Aim the microphone close.
Okay. Sorry.
So based on the park standards document, the park survey results, what was identified in our risk assessment and level of service and standards guidelines that we've created, and staff is recommending the following for sort of our next steps or our priorities within our spaces. So as mentioned, the playground had to be removed at the mark, so we recommend that an accessible playground be put back in. We are recommending that the Indian Falls stairs be replaced as the current ones have reached their end of life cycle. We are recommending that we install accessible furnishings within our spaces, many of which we already have. We just would need to install them. We'd like to continue with the Mark Trail and the Arthur Young Trail upgrades, which was the ditching and the surface repairs that started last year, and this would be to complete that project. And then we also recommend that there would be some money set aside to be discussed within the capital budget process for the accessibility upgrades that will come as a result of the audits. So this list is sort of a combination of all the stuff that we kind of have presented today, along with kind of maintaining or continue to close those service level gaps as identified in the park standards document. And that's the end of our presentation. If you have any questions.
Mayor Bolivar-Getson has a question.
Lots of questions. I guess, again, I go back looking at the survey results, and I know we had 309 people. I'm still surprised with the amount of responses that we did get for some of these, just based on the uptake and what time of year the survey was done. And I do know that we had a very rainy summer. So I think that that played into some of that. You said that the larger the font, the more that was mentioned.
Oh, yes,
because
sorry.
I also see it very small as well. So I questioned what it actually did mean, because I see playground equipment really small, and then I see it bigger and so on. So it just seems like there are a lot of everything, small and big.
There is. In general, it's the bigger you put your numbers into the little graph, and it spits out this image. So you spend
yeah.
the number time these responses so, were
so it's not really reflective
so
of that.
The bigger the font is what things that we heard more often, so that the swimming, the walking, the play equipment, the beach, picnicking, relaxing, those were the most common responses. And then when you look, you see like surfing, socializing, birding, kayaking, biking are all in there as well, but they're much smaller. So we didn't hear those things as much as we heard the picnic, swimming, walking, beach, play equipment that are in the larger fonts.
And the mush-a-mush washrooms and the costing, and option two would be a complete new structure on top of this, the existing vault? Because we now have glorified Johnny on the spots, do we not?
So we have two currently. And so this cost, is that better?
Yeah.
So this cost estimate would be if we were to put two new vaults in new locations within the park.
So it would be two separate washrooms in different spots?
Correct.
Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
And so it would be $95,000 or whatever.
Per structure and vault, yes.
And that's an individual?
Correct.
Okay, because I know that there was some request for some change room style, even if it wasn't a flush type.
Yes, yeah, so if we wanted to add change room options to either one, that would be...
Or a larger yeah, room, I guess.
That's correct. It would be...
Not just a Johnny-on-the-spot yeah. size privy, because anyone that has ever tried to change in those recognizes that it's not very pleasant.
Yes.
So I guess I would like to see exactly what's being proposed for... to say yay or nay to something or to looking at something without actually seeing what it looks like is hard to do for me in this particular case. Because are we talking the size of a Johnny on the spot, or are we talking something that's...
I do know that the...
We're talking a lot of money for a Johnny.
Yeah, the vault's structure, so that's called the house that sits on top,
yes.
would be designed to be accessible, so it would have certain size requirements for someone to be able to use, say, for example, a wheelchair to get up and in and maneuver around within the vault structure. So there, it would be much larger than the existing. The exact footprint, I want to say... Yeah, I think yeah. it's a 5-foot turning radius requirement, so it would be a much larger vault structure than what we have in place now. The exact dimensions I don't know offhand, but I do believe within the accessibility audit report there will be an example of the accessible vault structure presented.
So the structure that was on site prior to us removing it and putting in these temporary ones mm-hmm. was quite large. That was at Mush. It had two... I was there, and I'm just trying to recall exactly what it was, but it was definitely a lot bigger than a Johnny on the spot or anything to that magnitude.
I could fit in it with multiple children to get changed.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the other question that I would have is, I guess if we choose to go to this option two, are there... baby changing or something there, because one of the problems that I know that when I toured the site, we had disposable diapers outside and so on that people... So I guess I would like to see what this looks like.
Absolutely.
And I was just going to add that whether they're new or not, we're waiting on the audit report, which we just received, hopefully one of our final drafts on Friday. The design that they're presenting at MUSH will help us determine where we're going to be placing the vault toilets from an accessibility point of view. So currently we don't know if we'd be going over the current vaults or putting new in, and so that's why we've asked the consultant to give us a price as if we were starting from scratch to put, because we're waiting on that design. So we can't really give good advice around the location because we're waiting on that report.
And I guess I question how accurate the pricing is when we don't know exactly what we're building.
We did go back, and Stephen can back me up here, I hope. We did go back and ask the consultant not to try to give Class D estimates, to give a high, like more like a Class B or a Class A, because we know that council was wanting more accurate costing, particularly for the options of flushable or vault toilets.
And actually, the audit report, just the draft, I'm just looking at it now, they actually lowered the price of the vault toilets from $190,000 to more like $50,000 a piece.
So again, I guess, what does that reflect in the size of a build? What actually is it? I'd have to see what it is.
Yeah, typically, square footage-wise, I know if you're looking at accessible.
Even the layout. Like, if there's a design for a $50,000 privy, whatever, here, it would be nice to see what that is.
Yeah, minimum size for a washing, accessible washing, usually 7 by 8, 7 foot by 8 foot. It was a minimum. I know.
Which is quite small.
Yeah, that's the minimum. And then if you look
for
at
a wheelchair to go in, and
if you look at an adult change table, you know, then you're pushing to bigger for adult change.
Okay, if we could get some more information, I guess, on that. And can you go back to the last, I believe it was, slide in relation to the what staff is requesting for right here? Yes, and the Indian Falls stairs replacement, that's something that cannot happen in one fiscal year. Is that correct? Because I would like to know and ask the question if it's possible to maintain what we have with some engineering.
We actually are going to bring that back next week to council to be addressed, how we can fast-track that to possibly get it done in 1 year.
But it won't be done for the...
Not the beginning of this.
No.
No.
So if these are going in the exact same spot, it means that they would have to be replaced.
Or commissioned.
Or would it be better to... Is there... I guess my question is there a way to stabilize these stairs for the season and to do a later tender and do a fall build?
At this point, I'm not finding a solution to keep the existing ones open. I'm working on trying to speed up procurement to try to get it done this year.
But it would not be open for the season.
No. But we're coming back to council next week with a proposal. Yeah.
Thank you.
Councillor Greig, you have some questions?
I do, but the mayor just addressed one of my concerns. The Indian Falls stairs. Okay. I look forward to hearing the report next week. Very much so. The other one on the list that I also want to just talk about a little bit is the Mark Accessible Playground. So the playground that was at the Mark is completely gone, correct? So that playground was there for how long, and we took it away?
Over
20 years, a playground, we took it away. Hey. I don't know the rest of you guys around the table how often you guys go to playgrounds. I do quite a bit, not as much now that my kids are older. We have none. None. We have River Ridge Common, which is great for exploration. But me taking my children to a playground, I go to Western Shore. I now go to Queens for their awesome new playground. I go to the Valley. I go to Mahone Bay. I go to Bridgewater. There is none in MODL. Just want to point that out. And feel free to correct me. Sit there, think about it. Tell me where you would take your grandchildren to a playground in MODL.
Schools.
Bridgewater. Schools is fine when they're not open.
Yep.
But you have a 3-year-old. On a nice May morning, where do you go? Nowhere in MODL. And if we had a playground there for 20 years, and now we have taken it away, and for insurance reasons, not just because we're mean. Just throw that out there. Not everyone's mean around the table.
Michelle.
I'd like us to put that back. We need a playground, and an accessible playground, even better. Amazing. Let's do it. I wanted to talk about that.
Sorry. We're going to go in order, and we have Councillor DeLong next.
I'm not sure how to follow that. The accessibility audits, are those going to be ongoing? Because you said you've completed 5 this year. What happens next?
That will be a direction of council. We did do audits for 5 of our parks, and Sawpit Wharf will be coming back on Tuesday, hopefully with an award. So we'll be doing a Rick Hansen accessibility lens at that park as well. And then we have the MARC reimagining in our 5-year capital plan, and hopefully looking at Wilds Lake as well. So that's what's really in the 5-year plan at this point. We have to be realistic in what we can produce and get capital projects done. But it would be the intent as we move along to look at every one of the parks.
Councillor Vino, you have a question?
Thank you. And follow up to something that the mayor touched base on with the design and layout of the privy toilets. I think it would be an important, while it doesn't take up a lot of room, design is important for baby changing stations that come down from the wall to make sure that they're not hindering the door or above a toilet. It might seem like a very small matter, but there's a lot of times that I'll go there and, like the mayor said, diapers are kind of everywhere, but providing a proper spot, I can see parents and caregivers using that as well. Thank you.
Councillor Statton.
Excuse me, I'm not sure if you can hear me or not. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, perfect. Okay. I have a lot of questions and I want to ask.
Now we can't. You have to get right in front of your mic.
Right here? Can you hear me?
You bet.
Okay. I'll just ask a few questions and a few comments. And the surveys we've done, and they come out with the beaches, the saltwater beaches being most popular. And I'm just wondering when those surveys were done and how they were done, because it seems to me like some of our saltwater, some of our freshwater lakes, there's lots of people there, hundreds of people there at a time, and we only get that many surveys off of, say, Mush. So it's a little disconcerting. My other concern is that we rezzed all the playground equipment because someone from insurance company said they weren't safe. We took concrete benches that no way in hell, it takes 2 men to move them, that they're going to fall over. They may have to have been leveled a little bit, but they're not going to fall over because they're concrete benches. So that annoyed me a little bit. It doesn't take much these days. My other thing is the toilets at Mush. I would like to see what the design is before we issue an RFP or we go out to contract them out. I really, as Carolyn said, would like to see what the plan is and what is going on. And Stephen said something or someone said something, relocating them. So that means you have to put new tanks in if you relocate them. So I'm really concerned about what we might be proposing in that respect. So I'll wait to hear some more from all of you. Thank you.
Okay. The surveys were completed over 10 weeks over the summer. All the spaces were visited, and within the report, there is a chart that shows the breakdown of how many times each site was visited and how many surveys were collected then. Our summer student did go out for the in-person surveys, went out either morning, evening, daytime, generally on the nicer days across all of the spaces to try to gather input from the get the best input that she could across all the spaces. Then we also had some surveys that were completed online, and those were advertised through MODL message, through all of our publications that go out, as well as radio ads. And once the radio ads started, we really saw an increase in uptake of the surveys online as well. Yes, it was a challenging summer, so any day or time that the sun was shining, Erin was out in the park collecting survey collecting data. She would, like, if it was just a drizzly day, she would still go out and try to get, but that did make it a bit more challenging. But we did hit up all of the spaces throughout the summer. Oh, with the exception, we did not go to Tancook or Indian Point Rest Stop, which were the only two spaces that were not visited that were currently in the park standard documents. Sorry, you had some other questions. Benches. Some of the benches, which we didn't have pictures of in here, but are in the report, so you could see that a lot of the, like, they're pitting and broken or cracked concrete around where the bolts are that attach the benches together. So that was where those were the benches that were removed. If there was still life left in them, they were remained in place. But the ones that were removed were either weren't just they were either had rotten boards or broken and cracked cement. Did you want to speak more to benches, removal?
No, and there was a test that we were able to do on the benches throughout the spaces to confirm if they had to go. So as Marta noted, any that could remain are still in place. And we do have benches that we have in storage that we're looking to install this next season to replace those benches that had to come out.
We had questions about... you will see the within the accessibility audits, there are some concept designs for the space. For the spaces, so that will help show you some of the location and what might need to happen with specifically location of washrooms at MUSH. So if it were to make the space more accessible, the design or the consultant was putting together some reconfiguring the layout to help improve accessibility. So that will be within that report. What else did you have?
And just made notes as to the mayor's point as well, the request to see design for those accessible vault structures as well.
I think she also, Councillor Stanton also mentioned regarding if they were going to be in other places, it would be good to know where those other places are as well and why.
For the vault specifically?
Yes.
And that would be in the accessibility audit as well, the information. And we do have vaults that exist now in some of our other spaces. So Miller Point Peace Park has vaults, structures, as well as Hurdles Beach, and there's one at Maliga Lake Park as well that are existing structures.
Councillor Stanton, do you have any other further questions, or did they answer all that you had asked?
They've answered, but I can't hear them because they're talking so low or they're not talking into the mic. I'm not sure what it is, but I could barely hear what they said. But it doesn't matter. It's fine. Thank you.
Are you sure? Because they can repeat.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Councillor Bell, you have some questions?
Thank you. Steve had just mentioned that there was a cost adjustment in example two in the categories of washrooms. With that, I do hear the questions that other people want to see exactly what this includes. But with the price adjustment, why couldn't we move ahead with that type of concept if it meets the agreement of what people think needs to be into, including change baby tables, and locate at least one or two in Mush and Mush Park now, not touching the existing washrooms, so that there is, during construction, still a place to do what business needs to be done with a washroom. And then, once the new ones are built, you can remove the older structures, cover the opening until next building season, and then maybe locate two more, so that you now will double your washroom availability in that park, but you're doing it over a two-season thing, and you're avoiding a $500,000 washroom. I think that the council in the area would like to see the washroom capacity double and to ensure that there was no interruption during this building season or next building season. I can't speak for her, but I do understand that this project's been important to her, but I just am a little bit reluctant to spend $500,000 plus for a single washroom that may interrupt the beach users during a particular building season. Thank you.
Are there any other comments or thoughts at this time? Mayor Bolivar-Getson?
Thank you. I just wanted to go back, and I know that we did our classification of our parks and which parks are in there, but I somewhat, and I'm a supporter of the Walls Lake Park, and it definitely was that park that we had thought may become the accessible playground, the flagship for the playground end of it. And I'm looking at it being linked with the Mark and River Ridge Common that definitely are regional parks, no question asked. It seems, will the expectation be from the public, and I'm looking at this, it's almost like that's where we want it to be, but it doesn't seem to fit right in with them yet. To me right now, it's a destination park. It's not a regional park. And I don't know classification-wise if there's any other ones that we intend to elevate or do whatever to. But they're definitely, it's not a regional park at this particular point in time. And that would be my only question when I'm comparing it to River Ridge Common or the Mark in particular.
Do you want me to speak to that? So when Wilds Lake was placed in the regional park category, it's with an asterisk and the caveat that this was the not right now, but in the future we would like to have it sit there and meet these minimum amenities within that category, because we do see the potential, given the location, given what infrastructure is already currently on site with regards to water and sewer and electricity there, that there is potential to develop that park further. It would also be a bit of a blank slate that we could, instead of trying to amend a park to make it fit certain standards, we could create a park to fit the standards with the accessibility regulations coming into play. The municipality will be required to have a park that sort of meets all the needs. So there is a lot of potential for Wilds Lake to be sort of within that flagship category. And I don't know. Where our recommendation comes with the Mark is that we weren't necessarily expecting to remove that playground until we had the inspections done, both internally with our internal playground inspector, and then our insurer came in to confirm that, yes, it's reached the end of its life cycle. So now that, as Councillor Greek did say, we are now without playgrounds, and so we see it as an opportunity to replace something that was there. It's also well used by ball players. It is a well-used park, staff is recommending that something be put back in place because it has been removed.
So I guess my supplementary, if I could, there should be an error, something by this now. And if I picked up this document, general public looking at this agenda, there's no reference to that. So it almost seems like it should be these other parks that are over in the destination parks, they're truly destination parks. Mm-hmm. And I think everything else fits into the categories of where they should be, with the exception of Walls Lake currently, and whether you just put that air there and put the footnote and carry that along with it, at least people will know that the intention is for that to be a regional park.
Yes. Sorry. Are you referring to in the slide that it's not asterisked within the slides? Okay.
Yes, in the slide, and when we're referring to it, because, like I said, it doesn't fit currently, but it is there because we see the vision for that to be a regional park. But it's a long ways from a regional park currently.
Yeah, so what we can do to address that is we can put an asterisk in our current standards document and put an updated one on our website so it's there for folks to look at. I mean, point well taken, but Marta did explain the rationale at the time when we were recommending it to be a regional.
It is asterisk. Oh, and I agree. The potential is definitely there.
I will go back and confirm. I believe it is asterisked within the standards document. That should be on the website. It was just not asterisked on the slide. Okay.
Councillor DeLong.
I may have missed this, but Pine Grove, where does it fall in this assessment?
It's where does it fall within the categories? It was in a neighborhood park.
Okay, and will it be changed to a sports park?
That will be a direction of council. The park standards, like all of these documents, they are fluid. So as things change or if things need to be recategorized, that can be done. But, yes, I guess it depends on the outcome of what happens there. But it is currently closed.
I have a question at this time, as well as a comment, regarding the Mark playground. Is there not still the study to come back yet regarding where for what we want to do with the Mark and the possibility of where to have the vision of an accessible playground that may not necessarily be where the ball field is? It may need to be in another area. Is that not part of
the reimagining of the Mark is within the 5-year capital plan? That's not current. That's not my understanding within this year's plan. It's sort of like year three. I believe you're maybe year three of the capital year of the capital plan. So that would still be a few years out to reimagine, to determine what that might look like or where it might be within the park. And then after, once you reimagine, you would then still have to implement. So you would be several years out from a playground at the Mark.
Thank you. I also was wondering, I'm surprised that the low-hanging fruit of having a sign at Hurdles Beach for where the bathroom is isn't part of your recommendations.
that will come with also with our wayfinding. So improving our signage within our spaces is part of our wayfinding plans and potentially with what comes out of our accessibility audits or what upgrades might be recommended coming forth out of that will help address a lot of the concerns that we heard with regards to moving within our spaces.
Any other questions? Okay, then I'll continue with mine. The Mark Trail upgrades and the Arthur Young Trail upgrades. Are you also considering the part of the upgrades so that they don't wash out?
Yes.
Yes, that's the whole idea behind the improvement. So what it was, two parts. It was repair and improve to avoid future issues of major erosion on our trail network. So, of course, as everyone has referenced, this was a really wet season, and we had some torrential rains that caused an exorbitant amount of damage to both trail networks. So it was two parts to both projects, was repairing that damage, but then also going along and doing full trailside ditching, cross culverts to direct the water away from the trail, surface improvements to shed the water off the trail into the ditches, and then complementing that with the maintenance plan to keep those the trail surface and the ditch lines clear of vegetation and debris so that we make sure that the upgrades we are doing are effective once we have those major rainfall events. So, yes, the project is to make those improvements long-term.
Thank you. Are there any other thoughts or questions? No? Well, thank you very much for the presentation. We really appreciate it. And there's lots of things that the committee obviously would like to see you to add and bring back. We're going to go to 9.1.2, proposed amendments to MODLS policy 043, community grants. And I believe, Trudy, you're going to be leading us in this.
Yes, she's got the PowerPoint on there. Just give me a couple minutes for my technology to work. Joanne, I'm logged out, so you may have to. Oh, okay, there we go. Okay, it's on my screen. How do I get it on that screen? Oh, there.
Well done.
I did it. Okay, so this presentation is around amendments to our community grant sponsorship policy, MODL policy 043. So if council can recall, I think it was 3 council meetings where we got different directions for us to go back and take a look at our community grants policy. One was there was direction for us to look at an adult subsidy program, very similar to our ProKids program. And the ProKids program falls within our current grant sponsorship program. So we will be making a recommendation throughout this presentation to remove it from our grant sponsorship and make it a separate policy. From our perspective, this is a grants policy, and the ProKids in the new adult subsidy is a subsidy. So there is quite different between a grant and a subsidy. The second direction was to come back with a better definition of what constitute a community event and what constitute a major event. And the third direction was to have us look at the elite athlete grant criteria to see if we'd make any recommendations around changing that. So we did take the opportunity to take another look at the full policy to see if there was any other changes that we'd be recommending. And there are a few, and I'll outline some of the rationale as to why we're making the recommendations that we are today. So some of the main changes that's being proposed today is, as I had currently stated, to remove the ProKids program from the grant policy and include it in our new financial assistance policy, which this is the recreation show today. Tissy will be presenting after I'm finished with my presentation. Include under the purpose of the grant policy that grants are available for training volunteers, supporting elite athletes, and individuals traveling to provincial, national, and international competitions and sport, recreational, or cultural events. Although that was always there and we always provide it for this, it was never under the purpose. And so we picked that up and thought, well, it would be really good to put that, to include it, so it's clear if you're somebody reading our grant policy, you would have a clear understanding, oh, I should read further because there is opportunity for funding to train volunteers and to support athletes. Add that unless otherwise stated in the management agreements, funding would go through the budget and not the grant policy. And so the reason why this is amended is, if council can recall, the other management agreements that we have with nonprofit groups that manage property on behalf of MODL, at one point in time, council made the decision that they wouldn't have to apply for grant funding. They would just go through the budget process. And so that we added that to our grant policy. With the recent management agreement with Riverport Community Center, we specifically said that we weren't going to provide funding on a regular operational basis. But it wouldn't preclude them from applying for a grant. So that's the reason why this language we're recommending, so it really clarifies that. Add that proof requesting funds from the host municipality is mandatory. This is a little bit stronger language than we had before, than what's in the current policy. For example, if a nonprofit group was applying with the town of Bridgewater, we want to have proof that they've at least asked the town of Bridgewater for funding. So it's a little bit stronger language. And we are recommending that we remove the schedules to operations. This is really when we post the schedules. This is really the criteria. It outlines what we need, what we're looking for. It really, on the advice of the clerk, really falls within the operations and not so much the policy. So keep it in line with our policy documents. We're recommending that. A policy, as council is aware, takes 7 days, not that that's a lot, 7 days to change operations. It can be done a little bit quicker if we needed to change something. So that's why that recommendation is there. So I'll get into the specific changes around the specific grant categories. So our community economic development, not that Recreation Department administers that, it's our economic development department, but we did have discussion with the director. And to streamline this grant with many of the other grants, we're recommending that groups could apply each fiscal year. I believe currently it's like 24 months. It's not in the same fiscal year. So we're suggesting that it streamline with some of our other grants and that they can apply each fiscal year for community economic development. And we are suggesting removing the word event from this grant so it only be for economic development projects and initiatives. We think that it's been confusing for groups when they see the word event in the community economic development grant and then a community event and then a major event. Community recreation program, we're recommending that, again, to streamline it with some of our others, that we're recommending that groups can apply more than once in a fiscal year for different programs. Currently in our events, we can say if you're running different events, you can apply 10 times if you want, if you have 10 different events. So we're thinking it'd be good to align this if you're doing a new program or expanding. It's not to continuously fund a program that's currently existing. And the maximum amount now that folks can apply for is 1,000. What we are recommending, and you'll see this throughout the PowerPoint presentation, is that we put a limit per year per group, because hypothetically or speaking, somebody could apply for 5 community events. They're all different. They could apply for 2,000. Technically, we could award them half of our budget. So we're thinking that it's great that they can apply more than once in a fiscal year, but we might want to put a ceiling so that it's fiscally responsible for the municipality, but it's also very upfront. That, yes, you can apply twice, but the second time, you know, if you get 750 the first time, the most you could get the next application is 750 for a total of 1,500.
Are you okay with
sure.
having questions throughout? Okay, so go ahead, Councillor Moore.
No today. All right, the community economic development.
It has to be nonprofit.
Has to be nonprofit. Okay. Okay, that answers my question.
Does that answer your question? Okay. So the other main changes being proposed. So for the community event grant, currently groups can apply more than once in a fiscal year, providing it's for a different event. The maximum per event is 2,000. We're proposing a limit of 3,000 per fiscal year for community event. And our major events grant is the same. You can apply it more than once in a fiscal year, and we're proposing that the limit per organization is 20,000. Our budget currently now is 20,000. So even if a group wanted to apply twice, unless I came back to council, I wouldn't be in the position to award more than 20,000. And the differentiation between community event and major event, we did look and do some research, and we are recommending it be by budget. This would align with our major recreation capital grant and our community recreation capital grant. So we currently say in our community recreation capital grant that if a project is $10,000 or less, you apply for community recreation capital. If it's more than 10,000, you apply for major recreation capital. So we are recommending that a community event budget be under 30,000 and major events would be considered for budgets more than 30,000. It's difficult around the population because people, like the number of people that attend the event, I mean, again, that's objective. We thought that the budget is a little bit more objective, especially for an event that has perhaps ran for 5 years. You could ask for their last three fiscals, like in the last budgets, and so if their budget went from 10,000 and all of a sudden to 30, we could ask some questions. So we think that that is probably the most objective way to try to gauge what is a major event and what is not. Okay.
Looks like they're all happy with that. No,
well, I'm sure I'll have questions afterwards.
Community. I did have, if you want to
go back. Okay, I can go back, yeah.
So I'm looking at this and I'm seeing the change from 2 to 3,000. Mm-hmm. Is there a recommendation that there's an increase in the amount of money put in here? Because if there's not, are we really accommodating the need that's in the communities? Or are we prorating it and just falsely
No, we did look at this, and you'll see on one of the slides where we are recommending an increase in budget. Currently, under the community event, you can apply as many times as you want, and we really haven't had the big, you know, the influx. So our recommendation, and as we get to the budget, will be around elite athlete primarily, and to play this year out with these changes to determine if we actually do need to, because there's some that we spend and there's some that we underspend.
And Councillor.
Yes, he wants to make a clarification. Okay.
I'm not sure if you're misinterpreting it, but the maximum that an application can still apply for is $2,000. So we're not increasing the amount they can apply for per application to $3,000.
Yeah,
so it's $2,000 per application, but where they can apply more than once per year for a different event. The max per organization for a year is $3,000.
So whereas before we could have had organizations apply for 2,000 and get
2,000
each
time. And 2,000 for each time they apply for a different event.
So do we have organizations that have did that? And are we cutting someone out because of that?
Not specifically, no.
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 Okay. Councillor Stanton, Councillor Moore also has a question.
Okay, so you know I'm going to have lots of questions about this, and because of the time of year it is.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, a community organization is applying for a grant by March 1st for a major event.
No, the only ones that have deadlines is our annual operating budget and our major recreation. So that's March the 1st. All the other are you can apply any time of the year. So there's no deadline. And you'll note that we're not recommending any changes to the annual operating or the major recreation capital. If this was to go back next week and council approves this, it's not affecting anybody that's applying for a community event grant or a major event grant that hasn't put an application in yet, because there's no deadlines.
I was under the understanding that the major event did have a deadline.
No, it does not.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Can I go to the next?
Please.
So then our community recreation capital. So we are recommending, because we are seeing some community groups are managing more than one facility, trying to be more efficient and effective. We are recommending if an organization has more than one facility, they can apply for a grant per facility. The maximum amount per grant is $2,000. So if I have a ball field that I manage in a community hall, I could apply to improve the infield at the ball field and get potentially $2,000. But then I want to replace the tables and chairs in the hall. Then I could apply, because that's a different facility, but the maximum I could get the second time around is $1,000, because the maximum per any fiscal year would be $3,000. So trying to streamline all these grant categories in the same way. Okay. It looks like you had a question.
I believe the mayor has a question.
If an organization has more than one facility, they can apply for a grant per facility.
Mm-hmm. So I'll use the river. I'll use.
Oh, that's
river.
The Riverport. I just want to make sure that we're not excluding.
Because right now, currently, so I'll use the Riverport one as an example, because of the park going underneath the community center. The way our current policy is they could only apply once per year. And so they would need to combine their park and their community center, or choose one. The way this currently reads is that they could do something small capital on the park and also on the community center, because they're two different facilities but managed by the same organization.
But the maximum that they could have is $1,500. So is that correct?
The maximum they can have in any one year is $3,000. If we leave it currently the way it is, they could only get $2,000.
Yeah, well, I'm still not sure that should. It seems like, I guess I really support the approach that the Riverport community mm-hmm. took in putting the school, the playground, under the community center. I know that the community center will have individual needs. It's definitely an aging building with a lot of mm-hmm. needs, and we have a new organized or a new facility or a new area that is just being created. So the maximum that they could have per year is $1,500 each under that one umbrella.
If they want
to split. Is that correct?
If
so they want... it's a deterrent from our capital, from the old part to the new part for them to go together.
Well, actually, the way it currently is, where they're together.
But where they are, but if they would have stayed separate, they could have
correct.
Had 2,000
in each
one.
They could have had 2,000.
So this is one of these things similar to our fire departments with the mergers that we ran into. And I guess I don't like that idea that they can't have per facility.
Okay. So
because they are separate things that require a lot of attention and will. Tri-District, with their grants, lost out, and we bumped it up that we held them for I don't know how many years. I can't remember what it was, but it's indefinite now. But it was done for that reason.
So this is why we bring it to policy and strategy.
So I really think that I don't like anything that disadvantages the ability for a nonprofit to move forward with these upgrades to their.
So we could change that to a maximum of 4,000 per year.
But what if they have three? Does it?
We can take the limits out at all. I was trying to be fiscally responsible if somebody.
Well, no, but it's still being fiscally responsible if the maximum is $2,000 for if I own four playgrounds. It would be nice that I could do work on each of those playgrounds. And because of our operating umbrella is under one, we shouldn't be, I guess. Disadvantaged because of that.
I'm all in support of community groups. I'm trying to,
Yeah, well, that would be my take on this. I really think that they should be eligible to apply for the $2,000.
And have no limit.
It's not
year.
Like they're trying to get it for one facility. Mm-hmm. And I think that only makes sense if it was one facility.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is just to leave it at maximum of 2,000 per facility, but change it so that it can be per facility. Because right now, we'd have to change it to say per facility. Because right now we say per group, and so that would really,
That would be probably a more proactive way to go forward.
Okay.
I'm seeing nods.
Okay, so when we
I'm seeing nods. So.
That's one amendment, so I'll ask somebody behind me to. And then the last two major changes I think that we're recommending today is around the youth travel and the elite athletes. So if council recall, they gave us direction to go back and take a look at the elite athlete criteria, and we did, and we looked at other municipalities that has similar funding. I do have to say most municipalities only fund youth. They don't tend to fund beyond youth. That's one of the things that we did find. So I would say we're showing leadership with the elite athlete, making it more broad beyond just youth for adults as well. The original tent, and for some of you sitting around the table, you might not know this, but those of you that were around the table, you remember where the elite athlete grant came from, and it was really around those that were competing at really the Olympic level. And so this particular grant category has been revised several times over the years to I don't know why if I want to use the words less restrictive, but there's more than just the Olympics when people are competing at a very elite level. So we're not recommending actually to change a lot around the elite athlete. We're actually recommending to maybe make the criteria a little bit more clear. So we are recommending that first thing that the elite athletes must be residents of MODL and not Lunenburg County. Currently, our policy is for Lunenburg County, and I think that came from the original discussion when we were talking about elite athletes. If somebody was going to the Olympics, did it matter it was still showcasing Lunenburg County. Like if the Olympics was at Australia and they were saying this young Nova Scotian from Petite Revere, we would get that exposure. And so that was the rationale behind Lunenburg County. Since we've change some of the criteria, and we've spent all of our money. We had $4,000 this year, and we've spent it all, and they were all on MODL residents. I think Tissy had said two were Special Olympics, three were Special Olympics.
One Special Olympics, two Parasport.
And one adult. So just so you get a sense of what they were for, and they were residents of MODL. In fact, I know Tissy has an application on her desk for another elite athlete grant from a resident from MODL, which does not include the axe throwers that put applications in as well. So that's one, just again trying to look through the fiscal lens and spreading the funds. And one of the things that we did find is for any of the grants that other municipalities had, if they were funding an athlete, it had to be a resident of their own municipality. So include in the definition that elite athletes must have won their way or been selected to attend the national or international event. That's not something that we had in our policy, but something that we noticed in other people's policy, which made perfect sense. There should be proof that you've either won or you've been selected to go. And to clarify, to exclude professional athletes in the sport. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't get paid, because sometimes amateur athletes go compete at Spiels and get money. It's the sport organization distinguishes whether they're an amateur in that sport or a professional in that sport. So I jumped to the elite athlete, because that's just how it all started. So in looking at the policy, we thought, well, if we're not recommending changing too much around the elite athlete, how can we accommodate some of these other athletes that may not be elite? So we're still wanting to say that they have to be part of a national sporting organization at that level. And the reason why we're recommending to keep that as part of the criteria is because the sporting organization has very rigid rules as well of what, I'll use the example of drug testing. You know, when you're competing at that level, they make sure that you go through that stringent test. And if you don't adhere to their ethics, then you don't get to go. So that this was all part of the discussion that we had when we created the elite athlete grants. I'm trying to give some background for some of the folks that might not have been around the table. So then we looked at our youth travel when we're bringing forth the recommendation.
Before we continue on with youth travel, I do believe we have a question from Councillor Moore regarding the present topic.
Thank you. Back a while ago, a colleague of mine across the table here had put on about traveling, elite travel for axe throwing. Now, the axe throwing is still not recognized as a natural sporting level. Like, is that what you're saying?
That's correct. And so I will be getting into what we're recommending around the youth travel.
Okay.
I did reach out, just to address that question, I did reach out to the organizer of the axe thrower competition in Barrington. They do not have a national sporting organization. She's thinking that they're going to eventually be going in that direction. She did comment that there is an axe throwing club in Nova Scotia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That people could be a member of. And that really was established in Nova Scotia because of the event that took place in Barrington.
Mm-hmm.
And I think funding was attached to that in order to get funding from other I won't name the organization, but from other organizations, those funders wanted to see that, you know, they're part of some association,
okay.
some part of organization. And she did confirm for me that you don't have, and I'm not saying I'm going to do this because I've only thrown an axe like probably three times in my life, but technically I could book my flight and go to England, and I could compete in the axe throwing event. I don't have to qualify. I don't have to anything of that. So it was. So we're trying to do the balancing act of being fair, but really sticking to what the intent of the elite athlete grant. And I'm not saying that the axe throwing group will not become organized.
Yeah.
It's really an infant sport. And so they'll need to go through, I'm sure, mm-hmm. at some point in time, there'll be a, there'll probably be a national sporting organization for it as well. So staff and I sit down, took a look, and we looked at our youth travel. And so what we are recommending And you probably weren't expecting this recommendation today, but when we looked at the policy, recommending that the youth travel be changed to sport, recreational, and cultural travel assistance. And so this would be open to everybody, very much like our elite athlete. You can be a 10-year-old considered an elite athlete or a 50-year-old considered an elite athlete. So the same, not just doing the travel for youth, making it more broad. It also meets our, you know, our accessibility plan being more inclusive. It meets a number of those criteria. So we're recommending that the individual or group must be representing their club or organization, so still having to be attached to a club or organization, not a national sporting organization, or must provide proof of qualifying for the competition or been selected to attend the event. And again, clearly state the schools are ineligible. That's always was the case with youth travel, but just really clarifying that as well. So I'm going back to Councillor Bell's comment when we were directed to look at the elite athlete. If we do go to the sport, recreation, and cultural travel assistance, it would open the opportunity, and I think this is the example that you used, was the firefighters and the curling. If they are representing a club or organization or have proof of qualifying, we could possibly be seeing groups like that applying as well. They're not necessarily elite athletes, but they are representing the province of Nova Scotia because they've qualified, they've won their way to go to Ontario to represent the group. So this is less dollars than the elite athlete. The elite athlete is, you can get up to $2,000 for youth travel. If we change it to sport, recreation, and cultural travel assistance and keep the same amount, for an individual it's $75. At the provincial level, it's $200 if it's national, international. If it's a group, so they have more than 50% of the folks from MODL in that team, it's $500 for provincial and $1,000 if you're competing at international or national levels. So that's our recommendations. I think
we have a question from the mayor.
So I guess I would go back to that from the perspective, if you could. Yes. We have a lot of different organizations that hold their own competitions nationally, whether that's, I don't want to mention names, I guess, but they compete amongst themselves within clubs. Would they be eligible under this?
If they're going to a provincial or national or international and they're representing their club or organization, that would be one of the criteria. So if they could prove that they're representing their club or organization. We did, I will admit, as staff, we went back and forth and struggled with how to come up with criteria.
Go ahead, Councillor Moore.
But you're saying they would still have to be youth?
No. It would be adults. We'd be opening this up to adults. So I'm blunt, I tend to be.
Good. So, that's what we want.
So looking at the, you know, the direction came when the axe throwing came in. So it's like, we sit down and we discuss this, and I'm not saying that the axe throwers going aren't elite athletes. I'm not saying that at all. But what criteria defines an elite athlete? And so how can we really determine that? And typically when you're looking at elite athlete, you are part of a national sporting organization because they have very rigorous ethics and standards that has to be met. So I think that was the intent of the elite, because you're competing at a very, very high level. You've trained, you went through your qualifiers, you're representing your province, your country at these events. So that's why we added in the elite athlete that you've either been selected to attend or you've qualified to get there, because that is typical in other criteria that we've seen in other grant. And we wanted to specifically put excludes professional athletes in the sport because we really weren't specific in our criteria about that. So we thought, well, that's a good thing to add. So never hurts to go back and look. But the original intent of the elite athlete those very high competition levels, and really showing a path of how you got there. And so this criteria helps define that path. And so to try to come up with the compromise and be a little bit more open, that's why we were recommending changing the youth travel and making it more than just youth.
Councillor Greek.
Thank you, Chair. I have a couple questions around this. I like it a lot. Thank you. Thank you for doing this. I'm trying to find a way to please everyone. So it being sport, recreational, and cultural, mm-hmm. So if there were a youth in our community, one of the 4-H youth who won their way to the National Science Fair, they could apply under this?
Yes, they could apply under the sport, recreational, and cultural travel assistance, yeah.
Okay. So last year, perhaps it was a little longer ago now, we funded a robotics group from a school. Yeah. Was that...
They weren't from a school. They was a nonprofit
that was a,
group.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I'm making sure that we didn't rule anyone. Okay, yeah. Thank you. That was not a school. It was a club.
Yeah, we were very clear. Yeah, it was a club.
Okay, and so we're still covering them too.
Yes, because it's you're representing the club or organization and or providing proof. So if you're not part of a club or an organization, then you're providing us with proof that you qualified for the competition or you've been selected to attend. So sometimes because my kids were involved in sports, sometimes you might not qualify, but because of their abilities, they might get invited to this higher competition. So you've been selected to attend.
Okay.
And sometimes that happens. I see that often with hockey players. They get selected to attend certain.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Any other questions at this time? I have two, since we're on this subject. Would an elite athlete be able to apply for both?
And no.
That will be specified in there somewhere?
Well, we can add that. That's a good point. We can say, you know, if you're applying for elite, you're ineligible for one or the other. We can add that, if that's a direction to further clarify it.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good idea. And are we going to be adding more money to the sport, recreation, and cultural travel assistance now that we're expanding it?
And I might have to go to my next slide. I think that's one that we don't spend all of our money on. Oh, we did spend our full $3,000 this year.
We're projecting that we will.
We're projecting. This is the first time since I've been here. We have $800. We weren't going to recommend that. But we certainly can take that back and look at the budget. Now, our recommendation today will be more around adopting the policy as presented with those couple of tweaks. You don't really have to make a decision on the budget because that can be discussed during the operating budget when we bring that forth. So while I have this slide up, I won't read it out, but that's basically the money that we have budgeted in each one of the categories and what we're projecting at the end of fiscal.
Mayor, you have a question regarding it?
I've got a couple, but I just want to go back to the elite one first. And for the new sport, recreation, and cultural travel assistance. So if I'm a member of the Legion and I compete in the curling event every year, I will be eligible to apply to this for darts, for curling, for whatever, for the team that would be advancing on.
For travel assistance. Yeah. Okay. At provincial, national, or international level, yes.
Because those happen every...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I
just want to make sure that...
That was the caveat,
And the other question that I want to go back to is, if you go back to those ones that we recommended that there be a cap on them of maximum of $3,000 to $2,000, whichever other ones those were besides the ones that I said, it would pertain to events and all those things, the same scenario that I'm talking about, because if I'm having an event at a playground, it's a separate event than the event that I'm having at the community hall or vice versa in other locations that may be under that umbrella. So do, and I'm trying to think.
So what I think I'm sensing from you is you don't like having the caps, or you're recommending we remove the caps, and that's...
Well, I think that the cap is per facility. I think that that's the cap, not the umbrella organization, but mm-hmm. the cap should be on the facility for all of these.
And the same with the event. The cap
yes.
is like 2,000 per event. So take
but
off.
It needs to be like you can't have two at the community hall, but you could have one at the playground, one at the... It could be altogether different.
Oh, I see. The venue.
Yeah. Yes. Because it is two separate locations. Like, I'm going back to Riverport. They're doing this to actually amalgamate the overhead or the administration part of the organization. But it could be two separate events altogether that are...
And sometimes we have, and Tissy can correct me if I'm wrong, is we might have a group that owns a facility. And they do an event at the facility, but they might use somebody else's outdoor facility to hold events. So... That's not theirs, but they're holding the event there. Yeah. So
I would almost
recommend if we're not going to put a ceiling on the, don't put the ceiling on any of them and process the applications as they come in. That would be, I mean, that was something new and we haven't ran into the issue, but we thought, oh, well, what if we run into the issue and we've got three or four groups that.
Well, if you have an example, I guess I would like to hear an example of somewhere where it may not...
Well, I'm thinking of organizations that don't necessarily have their own facilities.
Okay.
So I'm thinking of community events that we've
yep.
sponsored this year, Lunenburg Pride. They don't have their own facility, so if they wanted to host multiple events mm-hmm. in different locations, would we fund every one of those at the $2,000? That's just an example of one that I can remember mm-hmm. we funded. So, yeah, there's a lot of organizations like the Bridgewater Triathlon Club. We fund a community event for their Riverport Duathlon. So would we fund multiple events for an organization that doesn't have their own facility that could...
But is there a way to
locations?
Differentiate where they do own separate facilities rather than an organization trying to hold multiple events in different locations? Mm-hmm. They legitimately own both or are operating both facilities.
Yeah, I think this is my own opinion. I think we'd be getting really complicated then. So I think that what I would recommend, based on hearing some of the hesitancies around the caps, is to remove the cap. And then, so if a group wanted to apply for two events, then we assess them based on their merits and how much money we have left in our budget, which is what we're currently doing.
Do we have a problem with what we're doing?
We have not ran into any issues as of yet. We were trying to hit off some possible problems because some of our criteria was you could only apply once in a year, so that was limiting in of itself. So we were changing our criteria to say you could apply more than once for a program. You could apply, trying to align it with our events funding and some of our other funding categories. So we're trying to streamline it. So when we were streamlining it, we were like, oh. So now all of these could be streamlined and we could get multiple ask. And that's why we were trying to say, okay, well, we can have more than one ask, but let's be upfront to say this is the cap. You can't get any more than this in one fiscal year to try to disperse our money fairly amongst more organizations. But what I'm sensing is maybe we should just not recommend. I'm hearing that the cap might be the issue. And we could revisit that in a year's time.
I think that we may need more discussion, more understanding of it, because some of the faces look a little confused on that. Yes, no? Okay, Councillor Moore, you have a question.
Okay, so, well, I guess, yeah, I am confused. if an organization recently applied for community capital community recreation capital
mm-hmm.
and was awarded it
mm-hmm.
and they plan on applying for by March 1st for an annual operating, or they might apply for
mm-hmm.
annual operating
You're okay. Two different grants.
Two different grants. Okay.
Right. Two different funding streams.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
So maybe I confused it more. My recommendation is, why don't we just get rid of the cap, streamline everything, and then the motion that I'll be putting forth is as amended, which wouldn't have... if everybody's fine with all the other criteria that they've heard, we'll just remove having a cap per category.
Okay, so I have the two changes, is that you can apply, that you cannot apply for elite athlete and sports, recreation, and cultural travel.
So right.
That's going to be added. And the other one was that a organization that has two or more facilities is able to have money, the $2,000 for both of them or more.
Right. Basically, what we're doing is we're streamlining the facilities. If they have more than one facility, they can apply per facility.
Okay. And then the third one is we're getting rid of the cap on...
all of the categories.
All the categories. All of the categories.
That we recommend at caps, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, wasn't there one nearer the beginning that we all thought was a good idea? Let me see. The community recreation program one.
Just my opinion again, but I don't think we should recommend a cap for a community recreation program if we're going to remove the rest of the caps on the other categories. And, I mean, it has to be a new program or an expanded program. Again, I emphasize with the programming, it's not to fund your same program that you do every year.
How does members of committee feel about that, Councillor Hubley?
I agree with removing the cap. It simplifies everything.
Yeah.
Easier to understand.
Councillor Greek and Councillor DeLong and Councillor Vino, how do you feel about that? Okay. Not yet. And Councillor Statton has a question.
I do have a question, and it's more about the policy, and it says or been selected to attend. Can you explain to me what category the person would be if they're not the athlete? What do you mean by or been selected to attend? Can you just explain that?
Yes, I could be an athlete, and there could be a national event or an international event, and I may not have qualified, but the organization invites me to attend that event because of my abilities. So you get invited, and I've seen that happen in particularly the sporting world. So
should we be asking the taxpayer to fund that? Help fund that, or should that be maybe the organization's responsibility if they want to send someone that's not part of the team that's competing? If they're not in that team, they're just asked. Could it be a relative? Could it be someone that's, say you're sending a youth and the parent wants to attend? Would that include the parent?
We would never accept. It'd have to be the event organizer, the provincial event or the national or international inviting the athlete or inviting the person. It just can't be, the coach is inviting. So that would be part of the application process.
Well, could you not clarify that? Because if I had a young person, a youth that was going to an event and I was concerned and I wanted to attend, but here's a grant that says, I've been invited. So I get the coach to invite me and all of a sudden I'm eligible for a grant. Am I fine-lining that too much?
No, we can clarify that.
That would be nice because I'm sure there's people out there that, as we all know, people take advantage. And I would hate to see that happen to tax dollars.
Yeah, we can clarify it, and plus it would be part of the process, so we'd be looking for that. We'd clarify it when somebody called and asked if they were eligible.
All right, but like I say, if you can clean the wording up, that it definitely says part of the team or something, that they have to be a competing athlete or something of that nature, rather than just be asked to attend.
We'll clarify the language.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Councillor Vino, would you be able to bring forth the motion? However, after, if you look at it, after it says request as presented, and could you add suggested amendments? Thank you very much. No?
Well, would we just say as amended?
As amended.
As amended? As presented, as amended?
Okay. As amended. All right. So as amended, please.
There's a lot of amends in there, so I'm just clarifying again that after as presented, as amended, additionally in there. Okay. Sure. Thank you. To the chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommend that Municipal Council amend MODL Policy 043, Community Grants Program Sponsorship Request, as presented and amended, and hereby give 7 days' notice of Council's intention to adopt the amended policy at the February 27th, 2024 Council meeting, and I so move.
And seconded by Councillor Greig. Discussion on the motion? Questions been called for. All those in favor? Councillor Stanton?
Yes.
Motion has been approved unanimously. Thank you very much. So I'm just wondering if lunch is here, because we could stop.
They're just setting it up now.
Okay. All right. Well, we can go on to the next one then, which is our recreation subsidy program, and I believe Tissy, you're going to be sharing this with us. It's 9.1.3.
Do you want me to close this? I don't have a fancy presentation. I apologize. Exactly.
And are you okay if they ask questions throughout?
I am good either way.
All
whatever
right.
You would like as the chair. Okay, so I bring forth policy MDL 98, a recreation subsidy program. So at the council meeting of October 24th, council made a motion to direct staff to develop an adult recreation subsidy program for consideration. So as Trudy just mentioned in her previous presentation, we removed the ProKids program out of the grant policy, and then we have included it under this new recreation subsidy program, in addition to the adult recreation subsidy program, which we are recommending, called ProFund. So that program will be specifically for those ages 19 plus to participate in recreation, cultural, and sporting programs. As I mentioned in my presentation back in October, MODL is a population of over 25,000 people, and over 19,000 of those are 19 plus. So that's over 75% of our population that currently does not have funding assistance programs available to them. So we're recommending that the ProKids program, as well as the ProFund program, for the criteria for submitting applications, we would use either a reference or they can provide their financial notice of assessment. So you can choose one of the options, and we put those on both of the programs to be consistent. If this were approved, we'd be seeking $15,000 in the operating budget. Again, that's a discussion we can have when we're going through the operating budget, but we'd be looking for a budget to fund this program specifically. And then we'd also, like our ProKids program, seek donations, and we'll hold fundraisers to help increase that amount of money. And then once all funding is gone through the fiscal years, through the fiscal year, we wouldn't be able to fund any more applications.
I have a question.
Sure.
Will we be creating a reserve fund for ProFund, just like we have for the Pro Kids Fund, for any money that is extra?
That is a great recommendation, and I would encourage that if we can do that.
Mayor Bolliver-Getson?
So the amount that we're saying is $15,000?
In the pot, yeah, for funding for the year.
And we know that 75% of our population could fall in this, and I don't know what percentage would actually be eligible, but I still consider, when I look at the senior population and so on, that it could be substantial. Right. And we currently put how much into Pro Kids a year?
Council puts in 35. And we budget 15.
50.
15. We budget 50. Council puts in 35, and we budget 15 in donations and grants, et cetera. So that would make a budget of 50,000.
I guess if we think that's a realistic number or not, the 15,000 for the first year, maybe rolling it out. But I would hate to see that it gets cut off at that point. I would say that it should come back to council for council's consideration mm-hmm. at that time to add more dollars to the pot if need be.
Absolutely.
Because I really don't think that the 15,000 will probably be adequate when this gets out in the community. I think there's a lot more need out there than what we're really anticipating.
And this, I should clarify that this 15,000 is the request that we'd be asking of council, not including what we anticipate in other revenues coming in for the program.
Okay. Again, I would just hope that it came back to council before we said no to someone.
I'm happy to come back and ask for more money.
You can continue on.
Sure. Ultimately, the administration of the policy aligns with staff's work plan currently, so it's our recommendation that the policy as presented would be moved forward to include both the ProKids and the ProFund program so that we're being inclusive to everyone within our municipality to participate in recreation, sport, and cultural activities.
And that's it?
That's all I got.
All right. Do you have anybody else have any other questions? No, I have one. In your document within the agenda, you say that I'm just wondering what your thoughts were in the suggestion that under the eligible applicants that any person may apply on behalf of an individual rather than the participant requesting the funds themselves. So I'm just wondering why you had suggested that.
Are you in the policy piece? Sorry.
I was trying to refine it. I was read it over on the weekend. So I was just under eligibility.
This piece?
Yeah, it must have been in the policy then. Yes.
Yeah, so for anyone so I guess I can clarify. Anyone who would be under the age of 19, we generally ask for a parent or guardian. It doesn't have to be a legal guardian. It just needs to be an adult that would be in care of or who supports that youth.
Okay, so this policy then is for everybody from infancy to death.
Correct.
That is going to cover all of them.
Correct. So anyone under the age of 19 would go through ProKids, and anyone over 19 would go through ProFund.
Okay, so it doesn't specify that it's... It just says eligibility. The following individuals are eligible for funding. Adult program.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm just... No. That's not where I saw it. Anyway, it does say somewheres in there that a person... eligible applicants. Any person may apply on behalf of an individual participant.
So are you on? Yeah, so we have a Schedule A and we have a Schedule B as part of the policy. So on the first page of the policy under funding assistance categories, it has Pro Kids program, see a Schedule A for criteria, and the adult program, see Schedule B for criteria. So I think you may be looking at Schedule A where it specifically is talking about the Pro Kids program.
It is Schedule B.
Schedule B.
Pro Fund.
Section 3.
Section 3.
Pages are mixed up. A person may apply on behalf of the Any person may apply on behalf of the individual participant. However, the participant must be. So, what is your recommendation?
Well, I'm just wondering why you were thinking that the person can't apply for themselves. Why somebody else can apply for them rather than them apply for themselves as an adult?
Yeah, absolutely. The one situation that I'd be thinking of is it kind of aligns with one of the grants that we just received. It was for Special Olympics. So the actual parent of the adult applied on behalf of those individuals.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. I was just wondering.
Sure.
Couldn't understand. Yeah. Thank you. Are there any further questions before we bring forth the motion? No? Councillor Greek, would you be willing to bring forth this motion, please?
I would love to. Thank you. To the Chair and members of the Policy and Strategy Committee, I move that the Policy and Strategy Committee recommends that Municipal Council adopt Modal Policy 098 Recreation Subsidy Program as presented and hereby gives 7 days' notice of Council's intention to adopt the policy at the February 27, 2024 Council meeting, and I so move.
Seconded by Councillor Hubley. Discussion on the motion? Question called for. All those in favor? Councillor Statton. She had to leave. Motion has been approved unanimously. Thank you very much. Lunch is here and ready. And so we're going to take a half hour break and come back then to continue with our committee meeting.